159 Ivy Street. Chapter 3A facade Christmas Eve Christmas was arriving in a quiet tone when bells are silent, with blown-out candles on the table. If it weren't for David and Michelle's Christmas Eve invitation, Braddon would have spent the night alone on his couch, Miracle on 34th Street flickering against the walls like a borrowed warmth. Instead, he stood in their kitchen, sleeves rolled, salt on his fingers, cooking a kosher half-turkey and stuffing it to perfection. The turkey browned obediently. Stuffing inhaled herbs and wine. Red wine gravy simmered low and patiently, the way he wished people would be. Braddon cooked the way he lived, quietly attentive, exacting without showing off. Cooking was one of the few places Braddon still trusted himself. He was the personal chef for Dave and Michelle. When David and Michelle tired of reheated dinners and defrosted convenience, Braddon stepped in, knife steady, presence grounding. Michelle and Braddon were longtime friends back in their university days. They hit it off from the first moment they met at the coffee shop. Braddon ordered his usual grand white mocha, no whip and a pump of raspberry syrup, distinctively attractive without being pretentious. Michelle was waiting in line behind him when she heard the order. "I've never heard anyone order that before, but I'm genuinely tempted." Braddon turned, eyebrows lifting just enough to find the face matching the voice. Michelle was about 5'3" with a roundish face and gorgeous, freckled green eyes that made honesty feel mandatory. "Just how tempted are you before I order two of them? For both of us, interested?" "For both of us," she asked. "You're brave." They'd smiled. It had been that simple. Braddon's confidence led to an exchange of new beginning of a beautiful long-term friendship. Michelle was dating David Murdoch, the second-string quarterback on campus, but he didn't think much of Braddon. In return, the second-string quarterback, campus royalty adjacent, was entirely unimpressed by Braddon. David, all confidence and momentum, Braddon, quieter, watching from the edges. They orbit in entirely different circles of friends, and Michelle was the only nexus between the two borders. Despite Braddon's quiet reservations, Dave and Michelle married the year before graduation. It wasn't about pity or jealousy. It was the knowledge of what might have existed if fear hadn't masqueraded as loyalty and the risk of losing a friend. Still, time softened everything. Years later, they remained anchored to one another through shared history, shared meals, shared silences that didn't need translating. Being alone and feeling alone is just a matter of physicality, but it has the same effect. After the meal, Braddon, a conciliatory guest, made jokes and laughed at the table with Dave and Michelle. On appearance, Braddon was having a great time over an espresso martini with Bailey's. To anyone watching, he looked content. Truth was, Braddon was hundreds of miles away and felt utterly alone, chasing a voice, the voice of his Josephine. Michelle noticed first. She always did. Something in Braddon's eyes, the way they drifted between sentences, the way his laughter arrived half a beat late. She sensed the hollow emptiness, even though he kept the flow of the conversation from one topic to the next. Dave didn't see it. Dave left the table. "Hey, you guys keep talking. I'm taking a timeout." Dave was already leaning toward the couch, beer in hand, Christmas sweater itching. Dave's idea of a great ending to a meal is lying in front of the TV and then falling asleep. This night was no different. Minutes later, his snoring stitched itself into the background noise of the house. Michelle leaned forward, elbows on the table. "Brad, what's going on with you? Something is wrong." "You're trying so hard to convince me that you are fine. It may have worked with Dave, I'm sure it did, but not with me. You're not okay. I sensed it and I missed you. Come back from wherever you are." Michelle was genuinely concerned with Braddon, directly across the dining table from her. Braddon cradled his coffee cup with both hands like it might run away. His shoulders folded inward. He couldn't even lift his eyes to look at Michelle while completely hunched over in silence. Dave's faint snoring can be heard from the family room while muted by the sound of the TV set. Silence stretched. "Come on, Braddon, talk to me. Please take me back to the coffee shop where we had 1,000 hours of conversations when you made me laugh. But sometimes you also made me cry, which I hated. Hey, come back to me and be my best friend again." Braddon exhaled with a faint smile and a chuckling gesture. "I made you cry because your eyes are most beautiful when brushed with tears. Just for the record, I have never left you." Braddon was lost for words, but has a million sentences out of semblance. Josephine was the only one who can make his world align, so everything reads like Shakespeare. At least in Braddon's mind, he has willed the power to Josephine, that he was no longer, and there was just them raised from the ashes. Then the words came, unfiltered, like something finally breaking surface. Chelly, I thought I knew love and had written many verses and sonnets. I am a drunk fraud using a paintbrush to write words without meaning. Then came a voice that said nothing important to me changed my life. She is the essence of every word that I was meant to say. She gave meaning as to why there are stars in the night, so I will never be in darkness. He swallowed. She's the voice no ears can hear, but my soul trembles to the sweetness from each syllable. She is my rose petals that hide my hefted body with thorns and scars. She is many more things that I have yet to learn and to say. She is my north, my compass with a name, Josephine. Michelle's breath caught, not in surprise, but recognition. She didn't know what to say after Braden's confession. The time for judgment has passed, and it would be futile. The Braden she knew was stubborn and knew he would walk through walls for love. Brad, you're in love and you must tell her. What you just said to me or anyone could fall in love just listening to you. What is stopping you? Braden's mind was unfocused with a heavy heart and a starving soul. He stared past the table, past the walls, into a night sky only he could see, naked beneath it. Walking toward a voice without knowing if it would hold him or disappear. Braden was lost unconditionally to chance without consequences. He's naked in a field, slowly walking towards a voice from a distance. The night sky with a million stars lit the path toward destiny or to be a casualty in oblivion. Josephine's December 24th was under the roof of a massive gathering of friends from the church. Natalie, her best friend, has an enormous family of 14 adults and another 7 children under the age of 11. Natalie's house pulsed with life. Christmas was always wondrous when children were around. Between the clinging of glasses, Christmas caroling, and gluttonous feasting, Josephine wished that Braden would magically appear. Every ring of the doorbell made her heart stutter. Every pause in conversation carried a brief, irrational hope that Braden would somehow step through the door, travel and logic undone. Christmas is a time of miracles for some, but not for them and not tonight. It was almost midnight, and the kids couldn't wait to open the one present under the tree. Natalie's family has a running tradition. Each child can open just one gift on the 24th, and the rest will be opened on Christmas morning. As many gathered around the tree in the living room, Natalie took Josephine into the kitchen. The ladies sat on stools around the kitchen island while eyeing a plate of pastéis de nata, then paired with a cup of Brazilian coffee. Jose, when are you going to tell me about this guy, this man in your laptop? Is he real, or is it a thing in a digital fantasy? Natalie said, coffee steaming between them. When it's said that way, it sounds creepy and borderline filthy. Josephine felt the unsaid tone of judgment, but it didn't faze her. It made her smile because she didn't feel like that at all, and it brought her comfort knowing just that. Natalie, I don't know what it is, not right now, but it felt right. Braden is the wind I needed to make me feel refreshed and alive. I love how he makes me feel every time we talk, for hours at a time. I can't tell you what we talked about, but how he made me feel each night before bed, I am completely safe and happy. I don't know how else to describe it, but I'm not alone, not anymore. Natalie studied her. She was concerned for Josephine, but also excited, knowing that her best friend was finding happiness, perhaps in all the wrong places. She knew Josephine wasn't happy in her marriage after many years of feeling suffocated and lost. Anthony, her 10-year-old son, was the only light she held on to, giving meaning to why she stayed here while being so far away from her home, Venezuela. Jose, I haven't seen you happy for a very long time. I noticed that you smiled every time you said his name. I don't know this, Braden, but seeing you like this makes me happy that my best friend is happy. But if it goes wrong in any way, I will kill this SOB. I want you to know this. They broke out in a roar of laughter, but the screaming noises drowned it out from the children in the living room. It was safe to say they liked their presence, and it's bedtime soon. It would be completely amiss to think that Josephine was not worried about where this relationship was going. She was worried sick about what their future would be and where it would take her and Anthony. Was this just for the moment, or until the candle gets blown out by the same wind she felt? What is Braden doing right now? What are his plans for New Year's Eve? Josephine's feelings of belonging and ownership translate to mystified jealousy and guilt. Is this the feeling of being in love? Natalie, it's late, I'm tired, and I want to go home. I had a great time, and thanks for being my best friend. Josephine had a hidden agenda, but she did not say it. She wanted to get home and see if Braddon was still waiting online for her. At that moment, Josephine felt desperate with a thirst like the desert needing rain. "Get out of here and find your happiness," Natalie knew and gave her friend a big hug. Anthony was spending Christmas Eve at his dad's place. Josephine was thinking about the Xbox Braddon got and the reaction when Anthony sees it in the morning. The image brought her comfort and a smile while driving home. Braddon looked at his watch. It's almost 1 a.m., late for most as the world turns off the noise to rest. For him, it's just the beginning, waking up his voice dancing to his heartbeat. He gave Michelle a big hug that felt like a lifetime of missed opportunities. On her tiptoes, she whispered to his ear, "She is yours, and you're hers, sweet dreams, my love." Braddon smiled, not because he was certain, but because for once uncertainty didn't feel like danger. "To my best friend, I will always love you." Braddon peeked into the family room where Dave lay across the couch sleeping. He smiled, then turned to Michelle. "He's the second luckiest man alive." Braddon went home. He logged on, and somewhere miles away, a voice was already waiting, breathing in time with his own.